the divine souls. Yesterday, while discussing the topics of the fifth chapter, we learned that the souls under the bondage of Maya are eternally turned away from God. But they do not have to eternally remain in this situation. By surrendering to God, the bondage of Maya can be eliminated, and the soul can experience the same divine bliss and receive the same divine knowledge that God has. There are quite a few important topics of the sixth chapter, and I'm actually going to start with the very last two verses of this chapter, and then we'll deal with the other topics. Tapasvibhyodhiko yogi jnanibhyopi matodhika karmibhyaschadhiko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam same yuktatamamata. Shri Krishna says that the tapasvi has to become a yogi, the jnani has to become a yogi, and the karmi has to become a yogi. But out of all the yogis, the best yogi is the bhakti. So what is he saying about becoming a yogi? In the Gita, just like in every scripture, you have to understand how a certain word is being used in that scripture. So in the Gita, a yogi means the one who's joining his mind with God. Yog means to join. Yuj yogaha. That's the root of the word yog. So joining your mind with God is yoga. So the tapasvi must become a yogi. What does that mean? It means someone practicing tapasya. Although it's not common in Kaliyuga, you probably don't know anybody practicing tapasya. You probably yourself are not practicing tapasya. But these practices are described in our Vedas. So even if someone is practicing tapasya, great sattvic austerities, yet, to attain God, he still has to join his mind with God. He can't become God realized just on the strength of his austerities, because that's his own personal effort. Every effort that a soul can make will be limited. You can renounce everything, meditate for millions of years without eating or drinking anything, or even breathing. Still, your effort is a material limited effort. So how can you attain unlimited divine God with any amount of material limited effort? You can't. The only way to attain God is by becoming a yogi, which means by surrendering to God. The jnani must also become a yogi, meaning one cannot transcend Maya just on the strength of his own intellect. Just by knowing that I am the soul and this body is not me, that takes intellectual power of the mind. And you can meditate on that fact for a million years and you can know your own soul. You'll be self-realized. You'll become an atma-jnani. But you'll still be under Maya, because not by any amount of thinking or knowing or understanding can a person go beyond Maya, because with what is he thinking and understanding? His mind, which itself is part of Maya. So if the jnani wants to go beyond Maya, he must also become a yogi. In other words, he has to surrender to God. The karmi as well. He may follow all the injunctions of the Vedas, do all the religious rituals, do all the good actions, duties, responsibilities, everything. Yet, all of that is still a limited effort. So the karmi also has to become a yogi, karma yoga. He must become a yogi by surrendering to God. But Shri Krishna says, out of all these different ways of surrendering to Him, in other words, by offering our karma to Him, by surrendering our jnana to Him, by surrendering our tapasya to Him, out of all those different ways of surrendering to Him, He says, Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam. The bhakt who just lovingly surrenders to Me with no other affiliation of tap, jnana, karma, anything, just lovingly surrender to Me, he is supreme. That is the best yogi out of all the yogis. So it shows, as do many places in the Gita, the supremacy of bhakti in two ways, that all other paths are dependent upon bhakti. Bhakti means surrender. If someone is becoming a yogi by joining their mind with God, that in itself is called bhakti. That is the very definition of bhakti. So what Shri Krishna is saying in effect is that the tapasvi must do bhakti. The jnani must do bhakti. The karmi must do bhakti. So bhakti is supreme and is independent because the bhakt doesn't have to do anything else. There's no other practice that the bhakt has to adopt. He doesn't have to supplement his practice of bhakti with karma, with jnana, with tapasya. What I mean is, although he has to do some karma in the world, but he's not doing that to supplement his bhakti, he's just doing it because he has a physical body. He has to. Although he needs knowledge to follow the path, he needs jnana, but he's not practicing some kind of intellectual pursuit of God, as you do on the path of jnana. He's using that jnana to develop his bhakti. That's it. So bhakti is supreme and is independent. It stands alone. And it gives the results of all the other practices. Yat karma bhir yat tapasa jnana vairagya taschayat yogena dana dharmena shreyo bhiritarairapi bhagavatam. Shri Krishna says, whatever results you can get by doing any other path, and you heard, he named jnana, yoga, tap, karma, dana, dharma, all the different practices in our scriptures. So he said, you can get the results of all of those without even doing any of those. Just do bhakti, it comes automatically. So bhakti is supreme, and bhakti is the main teaching of the Gita. Māmeva ye prapadyante, māyā metām tarantite. Daivi yesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Krishna tells Arjun that this maya cannot be crossed through any amount of effort or through any practice. Only those who surrender to Me, through My grace, they cross this ocean of maya. So that is bhakti. Surrendering to Krishna to receive His grace in order to cross maya, that is bhakti. So what is bhakti? Very simply, is attaching your mind to God. You've heard me use this phrase many times this week. Attaching the mind to God, or the heart. Or you can say loving God. But loving means developing attachment. Attachment means you feel a connection to someone. Just think of the difference when you look at a stranger and you look at someone you know. There's no feeling of connection to a stranger. When you look at someone you know, maybe your own child or your spouse or your best friend, there's some, we call it affinity. There's some bhav, a feeling of relationship with that person. That feeling for God is bhakti. That means you have attachment of your mind to Shri Krishna. So the question is how to develop that. Therefore, in the sixth chapter, Krishna tells us about meditation. Meditation is an intensive way of developing that attachment. Although we do try to remember Krishna as much as possible throughout the day, and we remember our relationship to Him, and that does develop our attachment to Him. But it speeds up the process if you take some time aside every day where you're not trying to remember Krishna while doing something else. You stop all of your worldly activities and you just meditate on Krishna. In other words, you do karma sannyas for a little while. You become a karma sannyasi. You stop all worldly activities and focus completely on meditating on God. How do we do this? He says, Yogi yunjita satata matmanam rahasi sthita ekaki yata chittatma nirashira parigraha. See the first word, yogi. The yogi means the one who's trying to meditate on Krishna. He's trying to attach his mind to Him. Yunjita means he's joining his mind with Krishna. Satatam, continuously. Rahasi sthita. He finds a quiet place and he sits. Ekaki. Ekaki means, it doesn't just mean to be alone, because you don't have to go to a remote jungle to do it. And in fact, you can do it in a group like we do. But it means that in your mind, you should be exclusively dedicated to Krishna. Just the two of you, nobody else. Nirashi aparigraha. This part is important. He says, if you're going to meditate on me, then become nirash. Nirash means hopeless. Give up hope. So what does he mean by this? He means have hope in Him, not in the world. The world is for calories and vitamins and minerals and protein. It's for maintaining your physical body. It's not for giving you happiness. As long as you keep believing the world is going to give you happiness, you'll keep being disappointed again and again. So become nirash from the world, but don't give up hope. Just turn that hope towards Krishna. Why? Because otherwise, what other reason do you have to meditate on? Why would you be meditating on Krishna if you hadn't given up hope from the world and turned your hope towards Him? If your hope is in the world, then meditate on the world. Which we do all the time. Whatever we desire, we're continuously thinking about that thing. That's meditation. That's how you become attached to things, by repeatedly thinking about them. So in order to meditate on Krishna, you have to give up the hope of the world. People wonder, why does my mind wander so much? Because you haven't given up hope of the world yet. You're trying to think of Krishna and your mind keeps going back to the place where it has hope of finding happiness. It's another way of saying where you're attached. We get attached to wherever we have hope of finding happiness. Jehi te kachhu nij swarath hoi ta par mamta karai sab koi sur nar muni sab ki yah riti swarath lagi karahi sab priti. It's an axiom of the human mind. Wherever we have hope of finding happiness, we get attached. So there's only one reason why we have trouble meditating on God. So when I give you a chance to ask questions later, you're not allowed to ask me that question. Why does my mind wander? Why is it so difficult to control the mind? Because now you have your answer. Because you're so attached in the world, you have that much hope in this world, in various places, that it will give me happiness. So of course your mind is going to keep going back there. To the extent we transfer that hope to Krishna, to the same extent, we'll be able to meditate on Him without interruption, without the interruption of our mind going back to the world. And aparigraha, that follows. It means that we keep collecting things of this world to try to find more and more happiness. If I have $100,000, then it must mean that if I got $1,000,000, I would be 10 times happier, because that's 10 times more money. So we keep collecting more and more things. If I have 10 friends and I have this much happiness, it must mean that if I had 100 friends, I'd be 10 times happier. So we collect more of that, more possessions, more of everything. But when you give up the hope of finding happiness from the world, or to put it in a more positive way, you transfer your hope of finding happiness from the world to Krishna, then you become greedy to get more of Krishna's love. That's it. And in other words, your greed for the world has been transferred to Krishna. Greed is not a bad thing if it's directed towards God. Be greedy to get more bhakti. Be greedy to experience more bhava in Krishna's love. So this is where we start our meditation, by understanding that the aim is to attain Krishna. And that's why we meditate, because we want to attain Him. He is the source of happiness, so let's attach our mind to Him. How do we do that? Shri Krishna says, Mana sanyamya machitto yukta asita matpara. He says, sit comfortably on the path. In the Gita, he also describes both sides. He talks about what you have to do if you're following the path of Jnana or Yoga and trying to meditate on formless God. How do you have to sit? What do you have to do? But along with that, he explains about bhakti. So on the path of bhakti, you don't have to sit any particular way. As long as you're not too comfortable, because if you're too comfortable, you'll fall asleep. So be comfortable, be relaxed, but alert. Sit alertly. That way you'll get maximum benefit from the meditation. But you don't, on the path of bhakti, you don't have to hold your fingers in a certain way. That's for certain types of yogic meditation. Doesn't matter how your fingers or hands are. It doesn't matter how your legs are crossed or not crossed, or if you're on the floor or in a chair or standing up. Be comfortable so that you don't have pain in your body and you can concentrate on your meditation. Then what? Bring your mind to Krishna. Your man. Meditation is done with the mind. So bring your mind to Krishna. Mat chitta. Your chitta means your heart. Mat means Krishna. Krishna is saying, Arjun, attach your mind to me. Think of me. And mat paraha. Mat again means me or mujhe. And paraha means have a positive feeling of relationship. What does that mean? Remember yesterday I told you there's 5 different bhav with which you can feel related to Krishna. Shant bhav, dasya bhav, sakya bhav, vatsalya bhav, and madhuri bhav. So that's what mat paraha is indicating. That's part of your meditation, is that you should feel related to Him in a loving way with one of those 5 bhav. And that in itself is enough to attach your mind to Krishna. Simple meditation for complicated times. Simple meditation for complicated people. We don't need a complicated meditation. Sometimes people are deceived when they hear about how easy it is to meditate on the path of bhakti. Oh, all I have to do is think of Krishna's form and feel a relationship to Him? Oh, what's the value of that? It's too easy. Oh, don't get fooled. The simplicity is what makes it powerful. That's why we can do it and succeed, even though we are souls of Kaliyuga. In Kaliyug, we have limited ability to focus and concentrate. Our body will only let us sit for a limited period of time. It won't let us keep sitting pain-free for hours and hours. We have so many other distractions in the world, so we need something very simple, to the point, yet that gives us maximum benefit for what time we do put in. So what do you have to do? Rup Dhyan is another way to say it. Rup, Krishna's form. Dhyan, bring that form into your mind. So meditation on the path of bhakti simply means closing your eyes and picturing Krishna standing in front of you. So easy. You've all seen photos or paintings. You've read descriptions or heard descriptions of what he looks like. Now, why does this work? Krishna says, Upavishyasane yunjyad yogamatma vishuddhaye. Simply by doing that, your heart gets purified, which is actually the goal of meditation. On the path to God, why do we meditate? To attach our mind to God, which purifies our heart. So why does it work? Is that also not just something we're doing with our mind? Remember at the end of the third chapter, I left you with a question that the mind is mayic. So how can you think of God with a mayic mind? Krishna is saying, if you can attach your mind to me, then you'll transcend all these worldly material defilements of the mind. But how can we attach our mind to someone who is beyond our mind? Krishna is beyond Maya, and our mind is made of Maya. Go, go, char, jahan lagi man jai, so sab Maya jaane hu bhai. Wherever the mind can go, as far as it can travel, it's always limited to be within this field of Maya. It can't reach God, because God is beyond Maya. So then, how does this meditation work, and are we really thinking of Krishna? So if we remember back to the fourth chapter, where Krishna explained to Arjuna that he is always omnipresent in his personal form, in all of his forms. So think about that. Are you really imagining, if you think in your mind, Krishna is standing right in front of me? Is that just your imagination? No, it's a fact. He is standing in front of you. In fact, he's in your mind. So the joining factor, though, is his grace. Even if he's omnipresent, he's still beyond us, except for this, that he's willing to grace us. So part of our meditation has to be a feeling of surrender. That's the meditation as well, that you have to feel surrendered to Krishna. You're meditating on him because you want his grace. So he gives it to you. He is omnipresent with his grace, and you thought of him with a desire to receive his grace, and he gave it to you. That's why the meditation works. Because through the meditation, we're submitting ourselves to Krishna. So you see, the meditation is something that we do all the time in the world. We think of the one that we have hope of getting happiness from. We think of the ones we love. So now in your mind you've decided, Shri Krishna is the one I love. He's the one I'm going to get happiness from. So I'm going to imagine his form just like I think of the form of the people I love in this world. That's not hard, is it? If I tell you think of your daughter or your son or your husband or wife, you can easily do that. So you can just as easily think of Krishna. And while you're thinking of him, what's happening? He's gracing you. Because you're thinking of him with this faith that even if I'm not imagining him correctly, how he actually looks in the divine world, it doesn't matter because he is here. So this image I'm forming of him, no matter what it looks like, it is him. You should have that faith. That bhavana should be there, that ye asli Shri Krishna hai. It's not my imagination, it's really Him. So He graces you for your bhav, for your effort. He's not gracing you for the quality of your imagination. He's gracing you based on the fact that in your mind you're thinking this is real Krishna and He's right in front of me. So it's not just a meditation, it's a means of receiving Krishna's grace. And that is why it's the integral practice on the path of bhakti. Integral meaning, it's the main thing that can't be done without. This, what you're hearing today about how to meditate on Krishna, if you're not doing that, but you're doing any other kind of bhakti, then you're not getting any result of heart purification. Whether you're doing puja, whether you're doing kirtan, whether you're doing pat or visiting holy places, any kind of bhakti done without this roop dhyan is not truly bhakti because your mind is not attached to Krishna. If we're not doing roop dhyan, where is our mind? It's in the world, definitely. There's no other place it could be. There's only two fields. There's the divine field and there's the material field. So if we're not doing roop dhyan of God, our mind has to be in the world. There's no other place for it to be. So if we're chanting God's name and we're not doing roop dhyan, it means we're physically chanting His name and mentally remembering the world. So no matter what kind of bhakti we're doing physically, we have to be doing roop dhyan. This is described very succinctly in the Gita, just with these two words, mat chittaha and mat paraha. Lovingly remember Krishna, attach your mind to Him. And when He says mat mujhe, that's Krishna Himself is standing there saying to Arjuna, remember me, think of me, meditate on me. So He's indicating with priority towards His personal form. He's not saying you can't meditate on His impersonal form. That's an option if you're qualified. But most of us aren't qualified. It's a very difficult thing to do, to meditate on formless God. In the 12th chapter, He says it's impossible for someone who's in body consciousness. If someone is in that consciousness that we all live in, where we identify ourselves with our body, then you can't meditate on formless God. So when He says mat paraha or mat chittaha, He's indicating His personal form, to meditate on Him as Krishna. He's not saying meditate on the soul. He never mentioned that. He never said to meditate on nothing, to try to clear your mind and think of nothing. He didn't say anything about trying to follow the breath or do it. These are all different forms of meditation which are valid in different ways, in their own way. But to purify your heart, there's only one thing you can do. Attach it to the personal form of God. And that's the goal on the path to God. You have to purify your heart. Once the heart is 100% purified, there's no delay in God realization. Krishna can grace you that instant with God realization. So the only thing we have to do is purify our heart, and that is done by attaching our mind to Krishna, because He's pure, He's divine. So if we attach our mind to Him, our mind purifies. And how do we attach our mind to Him? Just keep picturing Him through Roop Dhyan. Do that meditation. And while you're doing the meditation, you can also do kirtan. That's the most effective physical bhakti that you can add in. But if you also like, you know, if you're attached to any other practice, like doing puja or pat, that's fine. Keep doing it. But it must be done with Roop Dhyan. The most effective way for most people, though, is to do Roop Dhyan along with kirtan. That's the best combination. So in this way, Sri Krishna explained meditation. And if we want to attain God in this life, we have to take some time every day and become karma sannyasis and practice this meditation. Now Arjun asks the question I told you not to ask. Chanchalam himana Krishna pramathi balavadriham tasyaham nigraham manye vayoriva sudushkaram. Oh Krishna, this mind is so chanchal. It's more difficult to control than the wind. So Krishna says, asanshayam mahabaho mano durnigraham chalam abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate. He agreed, asanshayam, yes Arjun, without a doubt, the mind is difficult to control. But it is only durnigraha. It's difficult to control. It is not anigraha. It is not impossible to control. Abhyasena vairagyena. Through abhyas and vairagya, you can get the mind under control. So what is this vairagya and abhyas? Vairagya means sansar se man ko hatao. And abhyas, Bhagwan mein man ko lagao. Hatao lagao, hatao lagao. Fir hat aega sansar mein. It will. Your mind is in the world and you say, okay, I'm supposed to be meditating on Krishna. So you remove your mind from the world and you attach it to Krishna. Meaning you picture Krishna in your mind. That's your practice that you have to do. That's the effort you have to do again and again. Because your mind will then go back to the world because that is where you're attached right now. So then what do? Bring the mind back from the world to Krishna. How many times will you have to do that? Millions of times. Really? Yato yato nischarati manas chanchalamasthiram tatastato niyamyait datmanyeva vasham nayet. Your mind will keep going out, but wherever it goes, bring it back to Krishna. Or alternatively, you could try this, wherever it goes, put Krishna there. Same thing. Let's say you're trying to think of Krishna and your wife's face comes in your mind, or your husband's face comes in your mind. Then instead of struggling to say, no, I don't want to see you, I want to see Krishna, keep looking at them, but see in their eyes, see Krishna, or maybe see standing within them like a hologram, you know, one within the other. Krishna is standing within your wife or within your husband. So in that way, it becomes more natural. You don't have to try to, no, leave that thought, and you're struggling with your mind. Let your mind keep thinking about that thing, but just see Krishna in that or in that situation, whatever you're thinking of. Then, shanaihi, shanaihi. Krishna says, dhire, dhire. Gradually, your mind will come under control. My Guruji, Shri Kripaluji Maharaj, says that it's like training a monkey. In the beginning, our mind is as fickle and jumpy as a monkey is. But those street performers, they can actually train a monkey to sit still. They do it step by step. At first, what they'll do, they'll give like a 100-foot rope to the monkey, and then they'll tie that rope to something. So the monkey has a fairly large area to jump around in, but he knows that if he goes beyond that 100-foot radius, that his collar cinches around his neck and he feels pain. So he doesn't go beyond. After a couple times of trying to go beyond that, he just decides, I'll jump around in this 100-foot radius circle. After a couple of days of that, he got used to it, completely used to it. So then that street performer, he cuts the rope in half. Now he only gives him a 50-foot radius circle. The monkey takes a couple of days to get used to that. Then again, he makes it shorter and shorter until that monkey is sitting attached to a 1-foot rope. Then he'll sit quietly. Now, the street performer couldn't have attached him to a 1-foot rope on the very first day. The monkey would have gone nuts. He had to give him a 100-foot rope that first day, but he gradually reined him in. And then once he's got him on a 1-foot rope, the monkey gets so used to sitting still, he can actually take the rope off of him. Now the monkey's not tied down with anything, and he'll sit still because now he got used to it. So it takes time, but you can even train a monkey to sit still. So it takes time, but our mind will get attached to Krishna to the point that it will just naturally gravitate towards Him instead of gravitating towards the world. But that takes time. When our attachment to Krishna exceeds our attachment to the world, then it will be easier to meditate on Him because our mind will be drawn more to Him than to the world. So that just takes our effort. We don't even remember, but when we learned to walk as children, it wasn't easy. It was at least as hard as it is to train your mind to meditate on God. We fell down hundreds of times, got bruised, cried, but we never ever thought of giving up because there was no recourse. You know, if we had a recourse, if there was another option, you know, well, I can learn to walk or I could do this. No, there was no other option. Learn to walk or sit for the rest of your life? No, you have to learn to walk. There's no other option. It's the same thing. Learn to bring the mind under control by attaching it to Krishna in this life, or a million births from now, when you get another human birth, you'll find yourself listening to a very similar speech, understanding that, yes, I have to attach my mind to God, but my mind is difficult to control, so I don't know if I want to make the effort to do that. Maybe next life, and then another million lives will go by before you get another human birth. So you'll find yourself right back here eventually, and you'll have the same decision to make. But there's no recourse. It's like if you're really hungry and someone gives you a handful of peanuts, dry peanuts, unsalted, and you think, I'm not that hungry. You set them aside. Another 3-4 hours go by. Now those peanuts start looking pretty good. You decide, I'm going to eat these anyway. So when there's no other option, you just do it. We have no other option. If we want happiness, we have to attain God. So we have to attach our mind to Him. And this is the method, Rup Dhyan. Kripaluji Maharaj emphasizes this in every one of his speeches. He says that bhakti is not bhakti if you're not doing Rup Dhyan. It's not a spiritual practice if it's not increasing your attachment to God. And the only way to do that is by doing Rup Dhyan. But along with doing that, along with our karma sannyas, however much time you can carve out of your day, every day, to practice Rup Dhyan, during the rest of the day, we're not allowed to forget Krishna. He says, throughout the whole rest of the day, try to remember me every moment. This whole world is the form of Krishna, literally. We're never away from Him. We're never apart from Him. Yet we forget. We think we are alone much of the day. So part of the practice of devotion, if we want to become yogis and get our mind attached to Krishna, we have to do both. We have to take that time out for karma sannyas. And then throughout the rest of the day, as much as possible, we have to try to remember that our goal is to get happiness from Krishna. Our goal is to meet Him, get God realized. And He is our only true relation in this world. Keep thinking about that as much as you can throughout the day. And just keep reminding yourself, kind of picture Him somewhere near you. Every once in a while, stop what you're doing and just say, Krishna's right there. He's right here with me. Maybe you work at a desk at work. Maybe you're in a cubicle. Whatever you do for a living, maybe you drive for a living. So if you drive, then you have your passenger seat. If you work in a cubicle, you have somewhere there on top of your desk or next to your desk. Wherever you work, wherever you spend your day, maybe you spend your day at home. So wherever you are, you pick a place and you put Krishna there. And then throughout the day, you just keep maybe every hour on the hour. You stop what you're doing for 3 seconds. And you just look at that place and say, I'm not alone. Krishna's right there. And then go back to doing what you're doing. When you get used to doing that every hour, then do it every half an hour. Then every 15 minutes. You keep cutting the time down, and what you're doing is actually training your mind to repeatedly keep going back to Krishna. It's a way of training yourself to become a karma yogi, because the true karma yogi, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhya cha. The true karma yogi never forgets Krishna even for a moment. So we're not at that level yet, but we can reach that level if we practice. In addition to this, in the 6th chapter, Sri Krishna gives us some advice on how to live our physical life in the world. Natyashnatastu yogospi nachaikantamanashnataham nachati svapna shilasya jagrato naivacharjuna yuktahara viharasya yuktacheshtasya karmasu yukta svapnava bodhasya yogo bhavati dukkha. You won't be successful in trying to attach your mind to God unless you also live a balanced physical life, a healthy, balanced life. He says, Arjun, this path is not for someone who sleeps too much or who sleeps too little. This path is not for someone who eats too much or who eats too little. This path will not be successful for someone who does not moderate his behavior. So we're meant to find a balance, a healthy balance. In other words, it means that we're supposed to make use of the things of this world, but not live to enjoy them. Another statement my Guruji is fond of using is that yah sansar hamare upayog ke liye hai, hamare upabhog ke liye nahi. Upabhog means to indulge, like living to eat. I live to eat because I like the taste of these things. That's upabhog. That's a misuse of the world. Upayog means this is what my body needs, so I'm going to eat this thing because my body needs it, and it needs this much of it, so I'm going to eat this much of it. I'm not going to eat more than that just because it tastes good. I'm going to eat as much as my body needs. And I'm not going to eat this kind of food because it tastes good. I'm going to eat this kind of food because it's what my body needs. So you avoid the samosa and you eat the dal. Why? Because your body can get what it needs from the dal and avoid the deep fried samosa. This is how we balance our physical life and we make use of everything in the world without getting attached to it. If you enjoy the taste of food and you can't help it, then offer your food to Krishna. Visualize Him coming and partaking of that food before you eat it. And then eat it as His prasad and enjoy the taste of it. But in that taste, you should be thinking, Krishna ate this food. That's why it tastes so good. And I am eating this food so that I can support my body, so that I can do more bhakti to Him. That should be the goal of your eating. Then that becomes karma yoga. That action becomes offered to Him if you do it in that way. So this is the practical karma yoga of the Gita that you combine with the karma sannyas. Meaning you have to do your 100% meditation for some time every day where you stop all worldly activities. And along with that, you try your best to remember Krishna throughout the day. And along with that, you structure your living in such a way that it promotes health of your body, health of your mind, and aids you in your path of devotion. It shouldn't become an obstacle or a distraction. This is the way we were meant to live in the world. If we're living in the world in this way, then we're making proper use of this human birth. This is why we were given this human birth. We were given an intellect so we could use it to understand how to live properly and how to dedicate ourselves to God. We weren't meant to use this intellect to find new and exciting ways to enjoy the world. We're meant to use our intellect to attain God. In the end, Arjuna asks, Shri Krishna, please tell me what happens if I'm trying my best to attach my mind to you, but I die before I become 100% attached. What if my mind was partially purified, but I died before I became completely surrendered to you? What happens? Do I lose everything and start from zero in my next life? Krishna said no. Shuchinam Shrimatangehe Yoga Brashto Bhijayate or Athava Yoginameva Kule Bhavati Dhimatam. He says you start from where you left off. You don't lose what you gained spiritually. It depends what was your consciousness at the time of death. Were you making some effort to attach your mind to God, but you still had a lot of worldly attachments and desires and you're kind of still caught up in that? So you could say like a foot on either side. Then you'll be reborn in a family which is religious, but whether you're kind of in a worldly situation. There's still a lot of worldly attachment. You'll be born in that kind of family. And then maybe at some time in your life, you'll be exposed to the correct teachings of Sanatan Dharma or get the association of a true saint, and that will awaken those devotional sanskars that you had created in your last life with whatever devotion you had done. But if you were fully dedicated on the path, whether you are a karma yogi living in the world or a karma sannyasi who had renounced the world, either way, if your mind was fully dedicated to finding Krishna in this life and you had as much as possible reduced your worldly desires, then you'll be reborn in a religious, devotional family which is not very attached in the world, meaning your even your parents from birth, they'll be guiding you in that direction towards God through their example and through their behavior, and they won't encourage you to become more attached in the world. You'll be born in that kind of a family. So you continue from where you left off. And here ends the sixth chapter. So next time, in a few months, when we get to do this again, we'll continue with chapters 7 to 12. That ends today's program.